In June last year, during the G20 meetings held in Toronto, thousands of people, including many members of our congregations, assembled to demonstrate and protest the apparent indifference on the part of G20 leaders to urgent issues of poverty, inequality, social exclusion, and violation of human rights experienced by people around the world. The testimony I'm going to read is from a young man who was a student of mine last year and who impressed me by his gentleness as a person, his intelligence, and his commitment to justice. During the G20 protests, he was abducted by police, beaten up, held in detention for 3 days, and charged with assaulting a police officer. A charge that the Crown later withdrew after about 5 months and only after videotapes were released that showed what had really happened. This will remind some of you of other cases that have been in the media. This young man provided me with a transcript of his testimony and gave me permission to share it. I'm going to share just a few sections, not the whole thing. We assembled at 10 a.m. on Sunday, June the 27th, to attend a march that was announced by the organizers as non-confrontational. We marched to the detention center with a police escort and began a sit-in. Without warning, vans of people wearing civilian clothes skidded up behind the police lines, brandishing batons and charging the crowd of protesters. One of them screamed, "That's her," and violently proceeded into the crowd. A man running near me looked particularly eager to use his weapon. And seeing as how I had no idea that they were police officers, I held his arms at his side from behind. My intention was to hold him as passively as possible until the police could pull him off of me. None of the extraction team ever identified themselves as police officers, and I assumed they were vigilantes. As far as I understood, I was doing the police a favor. Once I heard "stop resisting" being screamed, I deduced that amidst the blows I was receiving, the police had neutralized the situation, so I went completely limp. To my surprise, I heard someone say, "Get him into the van." And the next thing I knew, we were speeding away, and all I could see was the floor in the truck of the van. All I could feel was pain, and all I could hear were threats. Still, no one had identified as police officers, and I was sure that I had been kidnapped by mercenaries of some sort. They had me bent over the back seat of the van with my throat on top of the headrest with which I was being choked. I was completely immobilized and couldn't move a single muscle. They continued methodically beating me with fists, knees, elbows, and weapons. All I could do was to try to ask them who they were in order to ascertain what my fate would be. Due to being choked, I could barely make a sound. What I could get out was simply, "Who are you?" I repeated this question a couple of times amidst laughter, and I assumed that if they had been police officers, they would have identified as such. I then came to the conclusion that they were killers and that I was in fact going to die. I managed to raise my head slightly and saw that we were being followed by a police motorcycle and was extremely relieved that at least the police knew I had been kidnapped and could potentially do something about it. Throughout, they continued to beat me from head to foot, not touching my face, but focusing on my spine, the back of my legs, my ribs, the side and back of my head, and my kidneys. At this point, pressure was moderately released on my esophagus, and I was able to croak out the question, "Who are you?" Finally, a male answered, "We are the cops. Who the blank else do you think would do this to you?" I wasn't sure whether or not to believe him, as the brutality of the situation seemed to tell me otherwise, that cops would have at least exercised moderate restraint. I began to be acutely aware of where I was being hit and finally decided that yes, these were police and I was going to live, otherwise they would not have been worried about leaving permanent marks. At this point, I relaxed a little and was just grateful that I was going to live. Regardless of what they did to me, they could not go so far as to kill me without fear of repercussions. That being said, at one point during the drive, they told me they were going to kill me, and one man said that they should put me in concrete shoes. They told each other when to ease up on the beating while passing cameras. They made room for a person who had previously been too removed from the situation to hit me. A male asked me, "What do you think of your right to protest now?" I made it understood that I could not breathe and was told that if I could talk, I could breathe. I could barely talk and barely breathe. I'll just read two other short sections. This is a bit later. The officers at the compound asked what to do with me and were told that they were to treat me poorly, as I had instigated a full fist fight with them. My possessions were taken off my person, my legs were put in irons, and I had my hands zap-strapped behind my back with what seemed like as much force as the officer could muster. In any case, I felt immediate and intense pain where they had been attached. My work boots were cut off me, and I was asked who I planned to kick with them. I responded that I had just gotten off work before coming down and was called a blank liar. So he does, he loses feeling in his hands and asks one officer to loosen his zap straps, which one does, and then they restrap him, but a little bit looser. I was given a glass of, so he still has his hands behind his back. I was given a glass of water on the floor, but had a hard time drinking it because my knees were too sore to kneel on the concrete and lap it up. Eventually, I figured out how to bite the side of the cup and raise it to my mouth in that manner. The next time the food came around, I was given a sandwich and told to be creative with eating it after I objected that I couldn't possibly get it to my mouth. One officer attempted to intervene on my behalf, the same one who took my cuffs off, saying, "How is this guy supposed to eat that?" His comment was ignored. I managed to get the wrapper off and tried to toss it up to my knees and catch it so that I could eat it, but found it an impossible task in my condition. I discarded it in frustration. I found that at this point I could stand and began to pace and kick around a loony that had been overlooked in the search and had fallen out of my pocket. When I felt that I needed to rest, I was grateful to have the unwrapped sandwich with which to make a pillow. The butter got all over the side of my head, but I preferred a greasy face to laying my aching head on the bare concrete.